So my name's Sam Jeffrey. Wasn't that amazing? I'm just so blessed to be here. My bad. Why? Such a blessing to be here for that. You know, when the reality of this topic, like I said earlier, is that we shouldn't have to talk about this. Tragedy is far too common in this world. So I want to start off by just saying, we gain nothing by ignorance. All right. So stories like this happen, and they shouldn't, but they happen. And if we just ignore it because it's uncomfortable, if we don't talk about it because it makes us ill at ease, we learn nothing from that. One of the many blessings, as Mr. Spann talked about, one of the many blessings that comes out of this is the ability to learn from it, the ability to understand what took place and apply those lessons to our lives. So I'm going to start off with that. I'm also going to start off asking for grace, and I'm going to ask for that from a few different angles. First of all, I'm not a professional speaker, all right? My background is one, I was a special agent with the CIA for a couple of years, and so I bring that experience to this, but in no way am I a professional speaker. I'm also not a professional preacher. So I'm sure if we get into a theological debate, I'll just make it awkward. You'll win, but I'll make it awkward, and so I kind of win. And so I'm going to ask for grace on that as well. But I do recognize this is a sensitive subject, so I got some respect for you being here. I'm not here to scare anyone either. This is a sad topic, but it's one where I feel the need to put it, to frame it properly, to put it into some context. So what we're going to do is we've got two sessions, one starting right now and one that's going to take place at 2 o'clock. This session, what we're really going to spend time talking about is the mindset that allows us to kind of stay ahead of the ball game, right? So it's much going to be geared much more towards the mental aspects of how you prepare for something like this. At 2 o'clock, what we're going to be doing is, for lack of a better term, and this is where I'm my lack of being a preacher really shows, at 2 o'clock we're going to talk tactics. I don't know what else to call it. We are going to talk about how do you go about securing your facility. It's going to be much more interactive at 2 o'clock because I don't have that much to talk about. So I'm hoping y'all are going to bring some questions, and we're going to talk about physically how do we go about setting up security at different churches, right? Every situation is different, so if we take, you know, if we start talking about how do we do it at Harding or how do we do it at Downtown Church of Christ where I attend or something along those lines, those some of the larger lessons will apply to churches across the board, but the reality is if you got different entrances, every church has different entrances, different number of entrances. They have, you know, some churches have magnetic locks where they can throw a switch and everything locks at a certain time. Other people don't have that. That's expensive to install. So, I mean, like, there's different things that we can do from setting up an armed security team to other avenues. And so we're going to talk a lot about that at 2 o'clock. So just to kind of lay things out. The reason, and this is hard, I'm not used to standing. Actually, I can do that. So, wow. All right. So here's the thing. The reason I feel the need to talk about this, when I was at CIA, what we did was we had a unique problem set that really nobody else in the federal government has. We sent people into high-threat areas, and they couldn't carry a weapon. Right? Now, let me say something that may be unpopular up front. I'm in favor of carrying a weapon. Okay? I'm not going to make any bones about that. Typically, stopping a bad guy with a gun requires a good guy with a gun. So I'm just going to throw that out there. I know that there are people who disagree with me, but I got the microphone and you don't. So there's that. But that being said, what we had to do was train our people in how do you survive when other people have guns and other people may have ill intent towards you. How do we get you into those situations and out safely, right? And so that seems directly relevant to this conversation, right? So here's the deal. When you are in a scenario, if you look at an attack on a timeline, right? And my students up here have all heard this ad nauseum, so bear with them. If you look at an attack on a timeline, and X is at the middle of it, X marks the attack. If everything that you do on that timeline is to the right of that attack, then you're in a really bad situation. It's all reactive. And in the best scenario, gunplay has already happened. If you're to the right of the scenario, you are picking up the prayer box and throwing it at them, right? Which I probably would have done the exact same thing if I was in that scenario. So I'm not trying to speak negatively about it, but if all you bring to a gunfight is a prayer box, historically the results aren't great, right? If you can somehow get to the left on that timeline, to the left of the attack, then you start having some success, right? And so what we're going to try and do right now is get a little bit out to the left, and that requires some knowledge. So this is a topic that, active shooter incidents are something that I go around the country and talk about. I was in Kansas yesterday talking about it to some extent and was in Texas a month prior. So it is a common topic that people are worried about. And so let's put it in some proper context. 24-hour news cycle makes this seem like it's happening all the time, right? And if you talk to churches, if you talk to elders, you talk to pastors, one of the things that you'll consistently hear is that people are wanting to know about security. What are we doing about security? And the reality is you need to be doing something about security, but the chance of anything happening at your particular facility is pretty remote. I mean, we just got to acknowledge that. And I say that as somebody who, I run a security business, so I'm in the vested interest of people. I have a vested interest in people wanting services, so it does me no good to downplay it. But the reality is, if you're talking about schools, there's, on average, 2017, which is the last year that we have statistics for, completed statistics for, according to the Department of Justice, there was about 30 active shooter incidents, right? Seven of those took place at K-12 schools, right? You have over 100,000 K-12 schools throughout the United States. I'm not good at math, that's why I do criminal justice stuff. But to me, if you've got over 100,000 K-12 schools and only six of them or seven of them are going to have those incidents, the chances of it happening at any one of them is pretty small, right? How much more so do those statistics stand out for churches? Because we got far more churches when you look across denominations. You've got far more churches in the United States than you do schools. And I think four of them took place in 2017. At churches. Now, every one of them was horrifically tragic, right? I'm not trying to downplay the reality of those individual scenarios. When you look at Burnett Chapel or when you look at Sutherland Springs shooting in South Texas, horrifically tragic stories, gut-wrenching stories. You know, if you listen to Mr. Spann talk and didn't get emotional, I don't know what your problem is, but you've got one. It is a significant, I mean, they're incredibly tragic stories. But we've got to recognize this isn't something that is, you know, it's just a matter of time till it happens here. That is a statement that I hear repeatedly, whether I'm talking at schools or churches. You know, it's just a matter of time before something happens. Actually, that's not the case. The vast majority of us will never, ever have to deal with something like with what Mr. Spann dealt with. Right? We're just not. Statistics don't work out that way. Now, that being said, we'd be fools not to prepare for it, right? We'd be crazy to not start taking preemptive measures, proactive measures to get out in front of this thing. And so we want to put it in the proper context and not go crazy with it, right? Paranoia helps no one. Paranoia leads to ignorance, right? What we want to do is understand the threat and start doing things to mitigate that threat. So what we want to do is really look at what a typical scenario, actually, let me back up. There's two angles we want to look at. One is the church scenario and the other is the school scenario, which is really what the majority of people here are looking at, one of those two or both. From a school scenario, the way that we kind of get out in front is there's a specific profile with the shooter, right? It's almost always the same. The profile is almost always the same when we start talking about the actual active shooter, right? So what does that profile look like? Well, this is going to be awkward. It shouldn't be awkward here, but because we should get it, but it's awkward when you talk about it in the wider world. 26 of the 27 most deadly shooters had no father. No father at all. 26 of the 27 most deadly shooters had no father and no father figure in their lives, right? mental health issues is a major issue. Oftentimes, people want to turn this into a gun control issue, and it's a mental health issue. I mean, like the gun aspect is almost ancillary to it. You know, Mr. Spann talked. You know, we don't know why Emmanuel Sampson was the name of the shooter at Burnett Chapel. We don't know what his motivation was. We do know that he said, "I received visions and voices in my head that told me to go do this at Burnett Chapel," right? He had significant mental health issues. Now, I'll go one step further because we're at lectureship and tell you, I'm not going to tell you he didn't hear those visions or didn't see those visions, right? Because as Mr. Spann said, Satan was trying to stop that church, right? Satan is constantly trying to stop the church writ large. So I'm not going to tell you that was a hallucination. He very well may have heard those voices. It doesn't matter, though. Mental health is a massive problem. Universally, we don't deal with mental health issues well. We don't deal with it from a law enforcement standpoint. We don't deal with it well from a school standpoint. We don't deal with it well from a church standpoint. We don't know what to do with people who have mental health issues. It's awkward, right? But if you're looking at the profile specifically for those shooters at schools, almost universally, there's mental health issues, right? The other thing is the active shooter at schools specifically, but also for churches, they have no support network, right? So it's not just that they don't have a father. It's that they get to a point where they have no positive long-term thought, right? So it's not that they don't think of the future. It's that when they think of the future, it seems horrible, right? Because everything in the present is horrible from their perspective, right? So we in here, we may get to those points personally where we look at it and are thinking, well, I don't have, you know, depression starting to set in, and we can start looking and getting down on ourselves. And that's perfectly, not perfectly normal, but it's common, certainly. All right, depression, anxiety, those types of things are massively epidemic in this country, if you're not aware. Certainly on the college and high school campuses, they're absolutely devastatingly epidemic, right? So it's common for people to have those thoughts. But what's different about the active shooter is that they legitimately have no support network, right? I would venture to say anybody in this room has somebody that cares about them, right? In fact, I know that's true because I care about you, right? So everybody in here has some sort of support network. When you start looking at active shooters at schools and churches, they really don't, right? Especially the school piece. There's just no support network at all. So they have no positive long-term thought. So what they're trying to do is craft a moment in which they can be in charge, right? Craft a moment where I don't have to listen to what other people think. I don't have to do what they want. I can, you know, finally get revenge, for lack of a better term, on all the people who've been mistreating me. That's what they're trying to craft, right? To my knowledge, the only way to get ahead of this is to show them that I'm going to ruin your moment, right? Now, this is not a comfortable statement to me making in front of church folk, but I'd be lying if I said anything other than that. I'm not aware of a way to get out in front of it, and other than to say, I'm going to ruin your moment. So how do we do that? Well, there's a few different ways, but let's acknowledge first that the current deterrents don't work, right? The current deterrents on becoming an active shooter are that we're going to ruin your future, right? We're going to send you to jail. You're going to die in the attempt, or you're going to be horrifically maimed, or whatever, right? I mean, Emmanuel Sampson, who shot up the Burnett Chapel Church, ended up having a .45 pistol go off into his stomach, right? That's a bad consequence, right? But if those deterrents were working, none of us would be here, right? If the deterrents that were out there right now, we're going to ruin your future by putting you in prison, or you're going to be maimed, or, you know, whatever, you're going to cause umpteen tragic stories. If those were working, we would not have an active shooter problem in this country. Yet here we are. So it is not enough for us to say, I'm going to ruin your future, right? Or as a society, we're going to ruin your future if you engage in these types of activities. What we have to communicate is, I'm going to ruin your now, Right? I'm going to get into this moment that you're trying to craft, and I'm going to ruin it. Right? So how do we advertise that? Well, the easiest thing to do from a church perspective is put a black and white right out front. I mean, it is easy. Cops are always looking for some overtime, and we ought to be the first people to try and give it to them. Because can a cop, if you got really regardless of your church size, can a cop cover the whole area? No, not at all. You can't cover the whole area. One person can't do that. But what that cop car outside advertises to a would-be shooter is it ain't going to go the way you think it's going to go. Right? It introduces a variable. It gives doubt to the active shooter, right? So we can do that. The other thing that we can do is make people aware from a church perspective that we have things in play, right? Now, one of the things leadership likes to do at churches and schools is explain to everybody, look, we've got a security team, it's Bob, it's Phil, you know, and like all this stuff. Don't do that. Don't do that, because then the person will walk in and say, okay, Bob's not here, Phil's not here, Jim's out of town, we're good to go, right? No. You've got security in play, and you need to just trust us, we got security in play. Now, you can't bluff that. You need to have security in play, right? But you don't advertise what that security is. I know that there is a thought process out there about, you know, you need to mark your security team in some way, right? I'm going to tell you that, and this is a controversial statement to make, and I recognize that, but if you can't tell, that doesn't really bother me that much to say controversial things. Don't mark your security team. The thought process behind marking them is if the cops show up and there's an active shooter, then how are they going to know not to shoot your security team? Well, the answer is because your security team isn't walking around shooting people, right? The difference in appearance between an active shooter and somebody tactically engaging an active shooter is dramatic, right? This is also why you shouldn't have, you know, that one guy that we all know at church who's like, just give me a gun and I'll take care of it. You know, I mean, like, that's, no, oftentimes the problem with concealed carry is the people who are most vocal about it are the last people that you want to have a gun, right? And it's scary to think about giving Jim giving Jim permission to bring a gun to church, because none of us are comfortable with Jim, right? But what we have to do is make sure that we are vetting our own people and we are having security in play. And that coupled with the cop car outside can sow enough doubt that the shooter says, not that one, or not today, or I'm going down the road. The sad reality, and anybody who does security or law enforcement will tell you this truth. The sad reality is so much of it is passing the buck, right? I don't have to be impossible to kill for somebody not to want to kill me. I've just got to look like it's going to be more difficult than the next person, right? I've told many people this. If somebody wants to come fight me, then we can do that. And I might lose, you know, but you're going to walk away limping. I promise that. Like I can't promise anything beyond that, but you're going to walk away limping. All right. Well, if somebody, the person next to me is an easier target than that, then that's who's getting selected, right? It's an uncomfortable thing to talk about in this type of scenario, but that's the reality that's out there, right? So that's kind of the tactics piece of what we're going to talk about this morning. We'll get it far more in depth with that this afternoon. What I want to spend the bulk of my time with this morning, and I want to just check my time because I'm having to condense. Normally, when I do this talk, we're talking about 4 hours, so I'm having to condense it a good bit. I want to talk to you about how do we get preemptive about this, all right? For us to get preemptive about it, we've got to recognize that security is our responsibility, right? And this is an uncomfortable thing because we hire security officers to care for us, to look out for us. We want the cops there to do that. But here's the reality. The response time for law enforcement across the United States is generally around 2 to 3 minutes. The average active shooter incident is over in 2 minutes and 15 seconds. So let that sink in. You call 911, and that's assuming you call 911 the minute the first shot is fired, right? Or the second that the first shot is fired. Help's on the way, absolutely. And they're going to come, and it will be overwhelming, the support that they can bring. And most likely, it will be too late, right? And I mean, this is the reality, whether you're talking about church, whether you're talking about school. This is why you've got to sow that doubt into the active shooter, because so much of what you're doing is trying to keep that shooter you're trying to deactivate the active shooter, right? And so you've got to sow that doubt in there. But security is on you. Your safety is on you. Now, I'm not talking about the spiritual aspects of it, right? Our nation exists today in the way that it does because all these terrorists who wanted to do things on so many different occasions, the Lord just said, not today. That's not going to happen, right? Our safety ultimately is in the Lord. But the Lord calls us to be good stewards of what we've been given, right? And this is one of the difficult things that in talking to churches, this is one of the difficulties that they have, is people look at it as a faith issue versus a stewardship issue, right? People look at it and say, well, you know, I trust in God, so I don't need to have security. Well, I don't view it that way, frankly. I mean, and actually, you don't either, because I bet you got car insurance. You know, you got car insurance. What, you don't trust the Lord to take care of your car? No. So we're selectively applying that thought process. This is not a faith issue, right? This is a stewardship issue. The same way that you take care of that car, the same way that you take care of your health, you are given something, and you're called to be fruitful with that, right? To be a good steward of it. Security is no different, right? You have to be in charge of your own security. You can't be waiting on the Calvary to show up. So how do we do this? The reality is it's ministry on steroids. That's what it is. I mean, I would love to tell you that it's a lot more complicated than Scripture lays it out. It's not. All the answers are in Scripture. And here's what I mean. If you are a minister, what you should be doing every day is going out into your community, into your sphere of influence, and looking for the hurt, looking for the lost, looking for the people who have no support network, looking for the people who need help navigating life, right? Looking for the people who are in crisis. As a minister, that's what you should be doing. Right? That's what we all should be doing, right? From a security professional, what type of person are you looking for if you're wanting to get out in front of the active shooter? The lost, the hurting, people who are going through crisis, people who need a support network, and whatever that fifth one was that I said, right? I don't remember. That's what you're trying to do. You are trying to get out there, but here's the deal. You've got to have a secondary mindset. The problem is that when people do ministry, they're in what we call condition white. And just so you know, I'm taking a lot of what I'm saying today from a book called Left of Bang. If you want to read that book, it's written by Marines for Marines. And in case there's any Marines in here, that means it's written in small words, right? The font looks like crayon. Don't eat it. But Left of Bang is a great book. I'm taking a lot of what I'm saying today from that. But when people do ministry, they're in what's called condition white. Condition white, it's part of the Cooper color code system. Cooper color codes were put in place or developed by a Marine Corps colonel, I think, Lieutenant Colonel named Jeff Cooper. And what the color codes do is they describe a state of physical and psychological arousal at any given point, right? Code white, the best way I can explain code white to you is if you've ever been driving home and you kind of woke up in your driveway. You know, like you're driving home and you just kind of go on autopilot, and all of a sudden you're in your driveway and you're like, man, I have no idea how I got here. Like, and you basically work out in your own mind that nobody died on the way, right? You're hoping there's no like burning school bus back there that you cut off, but like you've gone 10 minutes without any kind of awareness at all. That is code white, and the reality is that is where most people spend their day. In condition white. Condition white, from a psychological arousal perspective, you have no perception that there could be a threat at all, right? In other words, this is exactly what criminals, this is exactly what predators are looking for, right? Somebody who has no psychological awareness that there's any danger whatsoever, right? The second stage is condition yellow. Condition yellow is a state of heightened psychological awareness, but it is still a low state of physiological arousal, right? So your heart rate isn't increased, but your psychological awareness is. This is just, the best example I can give you is the antelope that's eating grass, right? It's eating grass, but it's looking around, right? Because there could be a lion around the corner, right? It's recognition that I'm going to go through my life. I'm not terrified of anything, but I recognize that threats could be out there. And so that's condition yellow. Next step up from that is condition orange. Condition orange is where you are going about your life still, but that heart rate starts to increase a little bit because you've recognized a potential threat. You don't know what it is, but you're seeing it and you're keeping your focus on it, right? And so from a psychological awareness, whereas in condition yellow, you're looking at the broader view. In condition orange, you start to get more hyper-focused on a threat, right? You spotted something that you think might be a problem and you start moving towards it. Condition red, your heart rate jumps up to about 160 beats a minute. This is when a threat has been identified. This is when, if you listen to Brother Spann, this is when they heard the gunshots and he looked out there and saw a guy with a gun coming in. That's condition red, right? The only stage beyond that is condition black, right? Condition black is when your heart rate moves up to 175 beats a minute. You are hyper-focused. From a psychological perspective, somebody literally could be punching you in the side and you wouldn't even be aware of it because you are so focused on the threat that's in front of you. At 175 beats a minute, your heart has become counterproductive. You can't load oxygen that fast. And so it's called condition black because eventually you're going to pass out. You can't do it, right? So the reason I have to go through all those color codes, there's five of them, is because you need to know about three. You stay in condition yellow, all right? Whenever you're out, you stay in condition yellow because you recognize it's a fallen world, everybody needs Jesus, and you might meet somebody who really needs him, right? That's condition yellow. You have to be in that because if you're in condition white and you run into a threat, right? If you run into a threat when you're in condition white, your brain, your body, your psyche cannot make the necessary transitions to start dealing with the threat. And so what you see is when your heart rate jumps from about 65 beats a minute to 175 beats a minute, you're gone. I mean, you're passing out. You'll eventually come to, and hopefully whatever happened has left you and those that you love intact. But if you are in condition white, your brain cannot make the transition to deal with the threat. And so you just pass out, right? It is imperative that as we go through areas where the threats are increased, so any area where there could be an attack. Now, obviously that's a really broad way to say that, but be thinking about this. Areas where people congregate, auditoriums, foyers, classrooms, places like that. That is your threat area, right? Think about times where the threat's increased. When I go to schools now, following the Florida shooting that happened at the school in Florida last year, I tell them, look, when you hear that, you used to think when you heard the fire alarm that it's fire, right? What you need to know now is that tells you danger. It doesn't tell you fire, right? The reality is no child in the United States has died from a school fire since 1954, not one. Right, schools are full of fire retardant stuff, and most of the construction stuff out there is fire retardant. Right, if I hear a fire alarm go off, I think danger because what happened in Florida? They had practiced active shooter drills, shelter in place drills, lock the door and make that room secure. They had practiced fire drills where everybody dumps out into the hall and moves to the closest exit. So that shooter stood in the hall, pulled the fire alarm, and short-circuited, I should say, every bit of training they had done, right? Those people, well-intentioned, went into that condition. It's condition white. You're following your training, right? You're doing exactly what you've been told to do. Everybody knows at a school, fire alarm gets pulled, you line up, get behind the teacher, and you move out. And what happened in Florida was people were killed in the hallway and in five different classrooms because they were doing a fire drill during an active shooter event, right? So you've got to think about times where you're vulnerable. But here's the thing. With churches, there's a ton that we can do, right? So with schools, it's a little more difficult because schools, most often the weapons are introduced for the first time inside the school. They're pulled from a backpack or a bag or anything like that that's totally normal to see a kid walking into a school with, right? At churches, though, what we see is something different. Most often, as was the case in Burnett Chapel and in Sutherland Springs and in any number of other places, the initial confrontation is in the parking lot, right? Now, why is that? Because nobody thinks to take a bag into a church, right? The active shooter thinks, I've got to carry the gun from my car to the church. And inevitably, or not inevitably, but oftentimes, they run into people in the parking lot. Melanie, this young woman who was killed at Burnett Chapel, just walking out, as you heard Brother Spann say, going out to get a cough drop, right? She has no recognition of what's going on. But he saw her and took action, shot her once in the face, and the initial shot was to the face. She turned to run, and he shot her twice in the back. Horrifically tragic, but think about this, and I am not trying to disparage anything that was done at Burnett Chapel or Sutherland Springs or any other place, right? So please don't hear that. What I am saying is these are situations that happen and we can learn from them. If a security team had been in the parking lot, it'd have been a different ballgame, right? If you have an active shooter that emerges into your auditorium, there's no way that's anything other than tragic, right? I mean, like, that is a beyond horrible situation. If you can push that security team out to the parking lot or just out by the front doors, you know, a security team, from my perspective, ought to look like a hugging, like back where I grew up, they called it the hug and howdy ministry, right? I'm from Texas, and they said dumb stuff like that. But the hug and howdy ministry was, I'm going to meet people when they're coming in, I'm going to shake hands, I'm going to look them in the eye, how's it going, welcome, what can I help you find a classroom, whatever, right? That's what it should look like, because you shouldn't be identifying your security team to random people coming into the church. But your security team should be evaluating everybody who's coming into the church, right? And not from a hostile perspective. It's not every person's a threat. There's genuine ministry there, right? I'm meeting people, and I'm engaging them, and I'm bringing them in, and I'm trying to get them plugged in, because at the end of the day, just as Brother Spann said, my main goal is for that man or woman, when we're talking about shooters, it's almost always men, unless we're talking about terrorists. My main goal is for that person to be in heaven. That's my goal. Period. End of statement, right? But given that we have to live in this fallen world, what I want to do is put eyeballs on them. I want to look at them and say, okay, is this legit? You know, I mean, like, is this a concern? There's tons of stories that make the news about active shooters. There's tons of stories that don't make the news about all the ones that were short-circuited just prior. There's a Baptist church in Nashville that had an off-duty officer doing exactly this. He was in the foyer. That was his job. There was one main entrance that everybody came into the church from, and he was putting eyeballs on everybody, right? And he saw somebody that seemed a bit odd, and he walked over to chat with them. Now, had the guy not had guns on him, which he did, he would have said, He said, I thought he was there maybe because that church had a homeless ministry, a ministry to the homeless. And so he's thinking, all right, like, so I'm going to help this guy get to our pantry or put him in contact with people who are in that ministry. So he's viewing it from a ministry standpoint. But he's also, because of his mindset, he's in condition yellow. He's moving up to this guy thinking, all right, I'm going to watch his hands. I'm going to see what's going on. I'm going to have a conversation with him. And what he discovers is this guy had major mental health issues and two firearms on his person, right? And so the guy ended up being arrested because he went for one of the guns. Most people don't know about that situation at all because nobody was hurt, right? That's how it should look. If there had been security at Burnett Chapel, this situation would look different, right, from a parking lot perspective, right? Had the young man who by any definition, is a hero. The young man who took down the shooter at Burnett Chapel. Man, I hope that I would act the same way that guy did. All right, so I'm not saying anything disparaging about him at all. But had his gun been on his person and not in the car, totally different ballgame. totally different ballgame. You are looking at a situation where he ran up and bear hugged somebody who had a gun, right? And the gun apparently had some sort of malfunction, but the malfunction worked itself out because the gun ended up firing, and thank the Lord, the gun was pointed at the shooter's stomach when it went off, right? Because otherwise it would have been pointed at Caleb. All right, and it's a different story there as well. So security is a would have changed the situation there. Aggressive, not when I say aggressive, I don't mean mean looking. Your church shouldn't look like a prison in processing facility. But if security had been deployed out front, it would have looked different. Even more so, when you look at the Sutherland Springs shooting that took place in South Texas last year, 26 people were killed. Horrifically tragic. Most of them shot twice, and most of them died. Most of the people who died from massive hemorrhage. All right, so I'm going to talk about a little bit about all that. The first shots that took place at the Sutherland Springs shooting took place from the Valero gas station across the street. Right, same situation. He's exterior to the building. He's carrying an AR-15, and you can't casually do that, right? And so there are people outside the church who spot him. They start to sound the alarm, and he shoulders the rifle and starts the shooting. 26 people are dead because that, and let me make a blanket statement here because I hate having to give caveats every time. The only person responsible for the dead people at Sutherland Springs shooting is the shooter, right? So I'm not trying to place blame on anybody. All right, everybody in that situation did the best that they could, and you can't ask any more of them. So the only person responsible is the shooter, right? 100% of the blame from a human perspective goes on him. But they tried to sound the alarm. He fired shots. Everybody else in the sanctuary just kind of was like, what's that about? You know, and if you've seen video of the interior of that facility, it's basically like this with walls on the side. I mean, it's a little bit more narrow. But there wasn't any place for people to go, right? I mean, like, there's one door at the front. He came in the back, and people who were in condition white were presented with a threat, and they went to condition black. I mean, back in CIA, we called it turtling, right, where you just kind of go inside yourself and go up into that fetal position. And you can't blame people for doing that, but it's not an effective defensive posture at all. And so they're down, and this guy goes around shooting people, most of them twice. Right? Indiscriminate. We're talking people from an elderly perspective. I think the youngest person was 6, if I'm remembering correctly. So he marches through this church and slaughters people, right? Slaughters them. And most of them died from massive hemorrhage. So I'm going to make a little plug here before we move on. From a security perspective, one of the chief things that you need to have on your person, for your security personnel, is a tourniquet, if not multiple. Massive hemorrhage is the number one cause of preventable trauma death in the nation by far. Security is almost by definition most of the time going to be a reactive thing, right? But the reality is the body count at Sutherland Springs would not have been nearly as high if people had been prepared to apply tourniquets, put pressure on wounds, things along those lines, right? I mean, that's just the reality. So from a security perspective, medical needs to be a serious concern. Now, from a true security perspective, in the sense of what are we going to do, you have to have your people in condition yellow. You need to have designated people who are not widely known to your congregation. If you are telling people what your security plan is, you effectively have no security plan. Right? This is even harder for schools because schools have to train people. They're required by the state to train people. And so given the fact that the majority of school shooters come from inside the school, you're training the shooter in what your response is going to be. Right? It's a really difficult situation. Churches don't have to have that same problem. As Brother Spann said, the shooter there had gone to church there 5 years prior. At Sutherland Springs, the shooter's mother-in-law went to church at Sutherland Springs, and the pastor had told him, you're weird. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't come back here. You're threatening people. People don't feel comfortable with you. They had had interaction, right? So the majority of our shooters are coming from inside the populace that we're reaching out to, and so we've got to make sure that we're identifying them, that we're moving in to say, look, you know, the way you deactivate an active shooter is to get closer to them, right? To say, look, you're not alone. I'm here for you. You need something. I mean, as a ministry perspective, that sounds sketchy, right? I mean, like, I didn't sign up to be a preacher so that I, or a minister, so that I could go hang out with really sketchy people. Spoiler alert, yeah, you did. That's actually what you're supposed to be doing. People who have no support network need you to get into their life, and that's how you short-circuit it, right? That's how you short-circuit that process. You close with the threat, right? Christians should be about that all day long. We're the only people out there, the only people out there who have an eternal security, right? The things I cherish most in my life, regardless of how much you hate me, you can't touch them, right? My salvation is secure in Jesus Christ. I love my wife. I love my four kids, and my desire is to be with my kids until they're grown and they have kids of their own, and I want to see all that, and I want to be a part of every bit of that, but I serve a God who can do all of it without me, right? Now, that's an ugly thought for me. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, because I know I'm not needed here, and my happiness isn't guaranteed because God is not pursuing a spot where I'm happy. He's pursuing me, right? And he's pursuing others. And so because my salvation is secure, I move towards those threats. I engage them. The people who, I've had multiple people pointed out to me, not a ton, but at various places I've worked, to include here, I've had people come up and say, hey, I'm really concerned that this person may be going down that road, right? I would tell you that those people think that I'm one of their best friends, right? Because my thought was, well, only one way to find out. Let's go chat, you know? And so I started meeting with those people. And you know what? It was awkward, right? Because by definition, they're socially awkward, right? They don't know how to communicate. So I had to do all the communicating, and that's fine, right? But what I'm trying to do is figure out how far along are we? And thankfully, in every one of the situations I was aware of, we weren't, I don't know that we were ever on that road at all, but to the extent we were, they now have a support network, right? They have my cell phone, and two of them have called me multiple times at 2 in the morning, right? I get back to them at around 6:30, when they've gone to sleep, so turnabout's fair play. But my point is, I give them a support network. That's how you short-circuit it. From a security perspective, we've got to be proactive. We've got to push our people out there so we have a perimeter of security, so that we're watching and we have, for lack of a better term, surveillance. But you know what? We should recognize surveillance for what it is. It's ministry. It's stewardship, right? My surveillance at a church is one where I'm looking for who's hurting, who needs help, who can I move to and introduce hope into their life. That's how it works at a church. That's how it should work everywhere, right? But I'm going to short-circuit their thought process by bringing the gospel into it, right? I apologize. I recognize I've been kind of all over the map here, but time constraints being what they are, I wanted to touch on a myriad of things. At 2:00, what the plan is we're going to talk about tactics. We're going to talk about and it's going to be a lot more interactive, and by a lot more, I mean it's going to be interactive. We're going to talk. If you got a concern, we're going to spitball it. We're going to talk about, you know, how do we handle these different situations? Whether you're talking about a specific scenario with a specific type of person, we're not going to use names. We'll just call him Chuck. But we're not going to use names. We're going to walk through different situations and how we deal with that. We're going to talk about security setups, how to deploy a security team, what you're looking for, things along those lines. So I hope you all join us at 2:00. But thank you for coming.